Okay, just a scoop of creamed potatoes, one slice of butter, four peas, and as much zombie takeout as you'd like to eat, doll.
What's up? Welcome to episode 309 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got quite a bit of listener submitted. This is from Apolline Romanence on, well, my post about watching Fifty Shades of Grey last week on my personal Facebook page. I mentioned that I was watching it. And before I get into this, I should mention, and she asked me to mention, that Apolline studies American Lit and poetry, and that her research is oriented toward queerness, feminism, and sexuality. So she had quite a bit to say about Fifty Shades. It's kind of in her wheelhouse.
We could have probably used her help last week. At least I could have, maybe. I don't know.
She actually posted this while we were recording.
Oh, that's indeed where she was while we were doing this.
She said, okay, so allow me to give my 2 cents on that. First off, I wrote a paper comparing 50 Shades to a parody book written by F.L. Fowler called 50 Shades of Chicken. I've since picked it up. It's awesome. It's a parody cookbook.
Okay. I was literally...
Yeah, it's a parody cookbook, yeah. It's a delightful little book, she said.
Chicken? Is that like Ernie Anastas?
Secondly, what pisses me off at first glance is the soundtrack. The main theme is Beyoncé's Crazy in Love, the latter word being grotesquely absent from the film. The filming is bad. It's not pornography, but your friend had a point when he says Black Swan is better. Someone earlier in the thread had mentioned that the lesbian scene in Black Swan was better than all of 50 Shades. I have to agree, and as I've mentioned, I was not a fan of Black Swan. Or Quills or Nymphomaniac. Lars von Trier's, though, handle it with care. I would like to add Quills. I've seen Quills. Good movie. Jeffrey Rush, Kate Winslet, and it's about Marquis de Sade.
Long ago.
Yeah, we should get to that at some point. Nymphomaniac, we'll see. I've seen a little bit of it.
Right, I haven't seen it because I figured I was saving it for the show.
Uh-huh. Okay, so yeah, Nymphomaniac we'll get to too. The problem with 50 Shades of the movie is that it's not sensual, erotic, though it claims to be. Audre Lorde said pornography emphasizes the sensation without feeling. Okay, so not sexy, not artsy. Guess what? The writing isn't either. And on the crunchiest subject, BDSM. In the media, it's rather unknown. Portrayal of what it could be can be found in Venus in Furs, for instance.
Which is another Polanski movie, I think.
Okay. We have a Polanski movie planned for next week. We'll get to that in the next bit of voice, a bit of listener submitted.
Sorry?
Well, no, I'm not. I'm just explaining why we're saying another Polanski.
I'm saying sorry to the listeners.
Oh, okay.
They're offended that we're doing a Polanski movie.
Oh, that too. Yeah, yeah.
As you know.
We had to consider our stance on Polanski. But continuing with Apolline's comments. I'm really interested in the human psyche and pain versus pleasure, control versus submission and love. I'm into consensual, safe, and sexy, versatile BDSM. And that scene when she asks him to do the worst to her and he just senselessly flogs her. I'm not an expert, although I researched that. I read Sod at 14. The scene claims to portray BDSM, but it shows to blossoming teens what it isn't. They don't know, sadly. It creates a false expectation on the reality of sex. But the movie was a big hit, all right. Sex shops have a line of items, 50 Shades of Grey, which is decent. It helped some couples get kinky in the bedroom. It certainly did. I didn't read the second book. Anna is going to an S&M club. She clearly isn't into that stuff. She needs time for that transition. She isn't his sub yet. So, yeah, she kind of threw it all away at the end of the first movie. And apparently in the second book, she's going to a club. That's kind of an interesting about face.
She comes back to him.
Obviously, otherwise there wouldn't be more books.
Yeah.
Personally, the I was sexually abused by my aunt, and so that's why I turned out to be like this kind of argument, Christian, didn't cut it for me. You don't have to be twisted to like BDSM or indulge in it. The ignorance is dangerous with such a topic. I gave it a D. Oh, and I watched it in a drive-in theater in Riverside, California when it came out. It totally was a board of my man. Thank you, Apolline. onto a voicemail from Bodo Winter.
Okay, you guys are doing quote-unquote trilogies for the most part, and then you're doing 50 Shades of Grey and Secretary. For the third one, you have to do Bitter Moon, 1992. That fits in with the trilogy theme that you guys usually do. By the way, it's Boto. So, I thought I'd just make a suggestion. Love the show. Y'all have a great one. Bye.
You have a great one too, Boto. And just for that, yes.
Yep, we discussed it before the show, and yeah, we decided we will do Bitter Moon. What other shows would do a trilogy about BDSM? And like I said, we had to decide on our policy about Polanski.
We were going to have to do Rosemary's Baby sometime anyway.
Fair point, fair point.
It's not like Polanski makes money off this show anyway.
he probably doesn't even make money off of his movies anymore.
Although, I mean, it could inspire people to want to watch the movie.
Well, that's the whole point, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, we're bad people. Let's just face it.
And on to some news. This is from the AV Club. Richard Kelly wants to make a Donnie Darko sequel.
Interesting.
Donnie Darko writer and director Richard Kelly has announced he's planning to revisit the film someday, telling HMV that there's something much bigger and more ambitious to do in that universe. He also said the new film would be big and expensive, so he'd want to make sure an appropriately large budget is in place before he moves forward with anything.
I honestly felt like this movie that we were doing this week is almost like a sequel to Donnie Darko.
Okay, well, we'll have to discuss that. I don't think I see it.
Where she's getting out of like the institution.
You know, okay.
Maybe she had a meltdown after, you know, Donnie.
Oh, Maggie Gyllenhaal. Gotcha. I forgot she was in Donnie Darko. Right. Continuing with the story. That way he'd be able to do it justice and not compromise anything. He doesn't offer any details beyond that. It's also worth noting that Kelly's comment doesn't even acknowledge the existence of S. Darko, the 2009 semi-sequel about Donnie's sister having a crazy adventure of her own. Kelly didn't have anything to do with that movie, so he either forgot it happened or doesn't consider it to be canon. I would like to forget about S. Darko. I did see it. It was on Netflix. I don't know what else there is to do in that universe, though.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I mean, he sacrificed himself. End of story, unless you're going to follow another family member. And we've seen how that turned out. Well,
yeah,
some of us have. The rest of you are very lucky. All right, so on to this week's movie, which is from 2002, Secretary. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by 4plat. Oops, was that a typo?
And also brought to you by Damaged Goods. Why else would someone stray from the norm? All right, so we have a woman getting out of a mental institution. She had been, she'd been a cutter. And she, of course, could have been a harm to herself. And she's, you know, getting her life back together. She picks up the typing skill. She feels comfortable with, you know, just, I guess, the focus and the repetition and whatnot. And, she takes this typing skill and parlays that into, getting a job as a secretary. Now, she's a secretary for this lawyer. The place is in complete chaos when she gets there. It's just, there's things thrown everywhere in the office. And she brings order to it. But in the process, he starts getting personal with her.
Mm-hmm.
Notices things about like her cut marks and whatnot. And decides, of course, you know, he's going to set her straight. And
He had made some forays into the dom-sub relationship before this. That wasn't his first move.
Definitely. Definitely right. In fact, save some of that for after this.
Uh-huh.
But so he sees a new sub, and he replaces that one pain for a more healthier pain. And
we'll get to that.
Yeah. But the problem is, It is taking advantage, of course. And it freaks him the hell out. And I don't think he counted on her liking it as much. So much so that she starts to stalk him a bit. And, well, there's, you know, she follows him around. And, but she still has this other relationship with this other guy outside. I guess an old high school friend.
Hmm.
When he gets too close to her, when she gets too close to him, I should say, he pushes her away. And she decides, well, I guess I'll just marry this guy. And then has, of course, a sudden change of heart. And hilarity ensues. But the weird thing about this movie is that it, on paper, it follows the rom-com
formula. Very much.
To a T. You know, boy meets girl. you know, they have their issues.
Yeah.
But, you know, then they push, one pushes the away from the other. But then, of course, the I belong with this person change of heart. Right. And, you know, big dramatic confrontation.
Actually running away from her wedding.
Yes.
Now, what I was saying about the damaged goods angle, they established right at the very beginning when she gets out of the institution, she needs structure in her life.
Yes.
So she doesn't necessarily replace anything. He offers, or I should say that relationship offers her the structure that she craves.
Well,
and they establish that his ex-wife is very domineering.
Well, so, right. That's what I'm thinking.
And he's actually hiding from her. So playing the dominant role allows him to assert himself and gives her the structure that she needs. It's actually a very healthy sort of thing, as opposed to the last movie.
I'm actually thinking that he was once her sub.
Possibly in the previous relationship, yeah.
Right. I mean, he had a sub. You know, the last secretary he probably attempted to have was a sub as
they,
well.
They hinted at that, yeah.
Yeah. And, But yeah, the way she was when she came into the office, I'm thinking it is possible that she was his dom.
Mm-hmm.
And he really just wasn't comfortable with the role.
Right. Yeah, it's not him. That's also part of the whole self-discovery angle. Because, you know, for her, it was a journey of, you know, recovering and finding the structure that she needs. For what was his name? I forget. Oh, Gray.
Gray.
How the hell could I forget that? Yeah.
Yeah.
The male lead, the dominant, is named Gray.
The other strange thing here is, of course, there's that whole weird Confederate thing of her name being first name being Lee and his first initial being E.
Oh, I never caught that.
Gray. Yeah, and it's a really weird thing to throw in there.
But as I was saying, for him, it's really a journey of self-discovery. He started off presumably as a sub. They don't explicitly say that. And he's really uncomfortable with being dominant for a while. I think at one point he actually says it's disgusting. And it was about him finally accepting who he is.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was hoping to push her away with it.
Mm-hmm, because he despised that part of himself. He wouldn't accept it.
I think that was the game plan. I think that's what he did with the last secretary. Uh-huh. That she, you know, until she was in tears and he just ran her out. And I think the exhilarating and terrifying thing that happened here was that she, as they said in Seinfeld, she's into it.
Yeah, yeah. And he finally was getting what he wanted, and he took him a while to realize if he did in fact want it.
Yeah.
Speaking of the secretary thing and her looking for the job, seeing the word secretary in the movie, with, you know, when she circles it, a little bit like every season of Doctor Who when they find an excuse to work that into the script.
What's that?
When they find an excuse to work Doctor Who into the script. You know, when she circled the word secretary, a little bit like that, a little overt.
Oh, I mean, that's just the name of the position. That's not...
I know, it just kind of stuck out a little bit.
Though. Not as random as, you know, the answer to the question. What question? Doctor Who?
Yeah, oh yeah. Doctor Who deliberately does it as a gag. Incidentally, is it just me, or every time do you see Jeremy Davies, do you think he's Henry Thomas?
I was trying to figure out where the hell I'd seen him in.
Before. He's done a lot, but he was in Lost for a while. Oh, you didn't watch that. He's done a number of other things. But Save every time Ryan. I see him, I think Henry Thomas. Henry Thomas was in E.T., for those who don't know the name. They look a lot alike.
Oh, okay.
The restraint scene I thought was a nice touch at the very beginning.
Yeah.
A nice hook. You see her actually doing her job in restraints. It was just a nice opening hook to kind of make you wonder what the hell was going on.
To know this wasn't just going to go in the same direction of your regular rom-com. And if you wanted to walk out, that was your chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. If this wasn't your thing. A lot of times I talk about the tone of movies and I criticize it. The tone in this movie was perfect because it didn't get too serious and too dark, though it could have been because Lee's backstory was really dark.
Yeah.
And not just her backstory. Her story in general was really dark.
But it was her nature. She was just kind of, you know, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
So it kept that part kind of light, but it also never took the opportunity to make a joke out of the self-harm scenes.
There was never a self-pitying to her, you know?
Yeah.
Took it and, you know, okay, so this is what's going on now, and now I'm going to do this.
Exactly. The self-harm scenes, there was never a joke there, but they also weren't played as melodramatic.
The one thing about this, the real true highlight of this, of course, is I think the acting.
Oh, yeah.
Gyllenhaal, just fucking phenomenal in this. I was wondering, like, why... You know, don't we see more of her? I mean, 10 minutes in, and I'm ready to shout at my monitor, no, don't do it. I'm just ready to cut herself. She says so much using so little with so much subtlety. It's just amazing. And of course, Spader is no slouch either.
Of course.
The Blacklist has been one of my guilty pleasures. And
I still need to catch up on that.
It's just sheerly for him as this mass murderer with the heart of gold sort of thing. It's just so weird. Yes.
Now, the film is based on a short story from the collection Bad Behavior by Mary Gateskill. And I did a little checking. The short story collection was published in 1988. This movie was, as I said, 2002. Twilight, the first Twilight novel, was released in 2007.
Yeah.
So I think this was far more of an influence on 50 Shades than Twilight. So, I think the characters in Twilight were just a way to for E.L. James to sort of couch her version of this movie.
Right. So she or this makes, story. You know, the Twilight fan fiction with this storyline, the characters from Twilight in this story.
Right.
And then, you know, changes the Twilight angle, changes the fucking name to Grey. What was she thinking?
Yeah, especially if she was, you know, influenced by this movie. I mean, that's a presumption, but it's extremely plausible.
How did she not
get
sued? Seriously.
Yeah, good point. Because, yeah, he was the original Christian Grey, but he wasn't Christian Grey in the sense that he was the overbearing control freak that that character was. He's more of kind of an insecure character.
Well,
and
right.
I liked that kind of put them on the same level from Go, is that they're both broken a bit and kind of unsure of themselves.
You're trying to figure out, did he just realize what he had done? Like, oh my god, you know, I've taken advantage of her?
Mm-hmm.
Or was he playing more head games?
I don't think he was ever deliberately playing head games for the most part. I mean, in certain parts, I think he was. But
yeah, he was trying his hand at it, though. He was learning as he went.
Yeah, he was obviously doing it when he was doing it. The initial revulsion was, I think, he just didn't want to accept that side of himself. And the scene where she's sitting in the office for days on end, I don't think that was a head game. I just think he didn't expect her to do it.
Well, of course. I mean, that's kind of where the movie lost me. First, he sees her forsaking her fiance. Like, she is clearly, in no uncertain terms, choosing him.
Right.
Hands back on the desk. And then he just leaves her for days. And then all of the people that came in and out, at first I assumed she was just hallucinating because she, you know, wasn't eating or, you know, sleeping right. And then to find out that that was real was kind of like, what?
It was a little bit of a indie film trope where, you know, the group of people, group of supporters show up because they think she's on some hunger strike at this office. I kind of liked that part. It was funny. And a number of them try to talk her out of it, of course.
It just didn't make sense, though. I mean, the town media and stuff showing up. Like,
okay, yeah, fair point. It is a bit of a stretch.
Right, it's like in some lawyer's office.
Yeah.
But the only way they would have known is if Peter had said something.
Right.
And why would he have? Why didn't he just be like, okay, I'm done with her. She's just right. Sitting in there.
Uh-huh. Well, her family would have found out when she didn't show up, you know. She didn't come home after a while. Maybe they went there and then some friends came. Because I got the impression it wasn't a large number of people. They all knew her. It was her family and her friends and her doctor. You know, from the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Priest. It all kind of made sense that these people would gather. It wasn't like half the town who didn't know her.
And then the lawyer's ex-wife was in there. I mean,
it was just... Well, yeah, because the ex-wife kind of got it. Because, you know, she when she left in the previous scene, she said, oh, a sub. So she showed up again to try to talk her out of it. And I don't think it was as far-fetched as you do.
I don't necessarily think she was trying to talk him out of it. I think she was kind of regretful. You know, he slipped through my fingers, where it was the line that she gave. I mean, of course, there were so many things like just said in and out of consciousness there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you kind of couldn't hear the whole thing. But, you know, he wasn't as good a sub either,
mm-hmm.
is what I think was going on. Were he tired of it?
Yeah, yeah. I just think it wasn't for him.
Yeah.
Which, again, is his whole, you know, journey in the film is realizing what is him. And I thought Lee getting the job without any work experience, just to roll back a bit, would be too unbelievable. But their chemistry and Gray's character were so bizarre that it actually kind of worked. It made sense that he gave her the job.
Well, everything is very quirky with his office anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Even besides the Dom sub thing, mm-hmm. You know, we only use typewriters here. I mean, granted, I have worked in an office where they did use typewriters for some weird things. And this is a good 8 years ago, but by the early 2000s, I don't know how many offices were still using typewriters.
It is very much an indie film, and I kind of liked that. It's that's, you know, typical small, quirky indie film that just happens to be about BDSM.
I kind of had the feeling that this was filmed more in the 90s, or it could just be that Florida is culturally...
Well, yeah, from what I understand. Yeah. Speaking of odd culture, there's a scene in a combination restaurant laundromat.
Hey, I remember those gimmicks.
There was a thing? Okay, I've never seen it before.
There were... I stayed away, of course. But, you
know, yeah, not somewhere I'd want to eat, except maybe out of a vending machine.
Well, it was a thing, you know, singles come here and while you're doing your laundry, and, you know...
Okay, I mean, it passes the time, I suppose.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was always a shit thing when you didn't have a laundry in the unit or house or whatever.
But, as I was saying, their respective kind of weirdness and brokenness puts them on the same level from their first meeting. And I liked how gradually the power dynamic is introduced. He didn't just automatically tell her, you know, you're not going to cut yourself anymore. You know, it was a very slow process to get to that point. That was the first time he really established that role, was when he told her that.
Yeah. And, you know, he did it in a way of, you know, I know our relationship is this way, but you mind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He did ease her into that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it was a really interesting analysis of self-harm. Because, you know, the usual is the physical pain distracts you from the emotional pain. In this version, it was when you cut yourself, you could kind of like see the internal pain coming to the surface and healing, which is, I don't know how accurate it is, but it's interesting.
You know, I think I'd always heard that somewhere. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Not that I have any experience with this myself.
Right, same here. And in the comment I read earlier, Apolline, with regard to 50 Shades, said it's not erotic at all. What I found interesting about this movie is it's erotic, but it's also really sweet because of that whole rom-com angle and how they kind of complete each other.
There was more sweetness than erotic at least to me.
Yeah, and but it was also pretty erotic at points. So it was a really interesting balance of the two. Speaking of the erotic portions, the first spanking scene seemed like a bit of a big risk for him. Because he's pointing out the typos that she's made, and he tells her to come into his office, put her hands on the desk, put her forearms on the desk, basically, and he just starts spanking the hell out of her. It was a huge risk to take, but it obviously paid off for him.
Well, I think by then he knew her, that she was just, I mean, her personality was just whatever's thrown at her, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, she dove into the dumpster, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
There's so many people that would have just been like, fuck you, you know.
Well, he'd already tested her quite a bit by that point, yeah.
Right, the donuts in the trash can.
Right.
I mean, and she didn't even say anything about it, you know. Uh-huh. Just, oh, and then moved on with it.
Mm. And I loved the bit with the saddle and the carrot. That was hilarious. And also when he almost fell off the treadmill. That was a really nice touch, because they could have gone for the cheap joke and had him completely fall. But he just kind of stumbled a little bit, you know, when she shows up at his house.
I can't see Spader doing, like, you know, Chevy Chase.
Yeah,
you
know? but a lesser filmmaker would have gone for the cheap joke in this movie. In a quirky rom-com influence movie, would have gone for the cheap joke of falling down. He just kind of stumbles a bit and, you know, gets off of it.
That's the difference when you have actors that know what they're doing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, director Steven Schoenberg stated that he wished to show that BDSM relationships can be normal and was inspired by the film My Beautiful Laundrette, which he feels normalized gay relationships for audiences in the 80s. For this reason, he changed the ending of the film to make it more positive, as well as changing a few other things in the original story.
I don't know. I don't know how much he really did that, because I still feel like you're starting from the broken goods kind of, you know, storyline, you know?
In a sense, but where's the story otherwise?
Like, I think a lot of people, you know, that aren't into it are going to see this and, yeah, walk out with it as she replaced something dangerous with something more healthy.
Well, no, she was replacing, if there was any replacement, it was the structure she had in the institution with a structured relationship.
But it was still another form of pain. You know? It was a lot safer, a lot more healthy.
It was very different. The pain isn't the point of BDSM. It's the power.
Well, true.
And the structure.
It's that, and...
Because they didn't do a lot of pain play. The spanking was about it.
Right. And I guess sort of the humiliation, too, in a way. And
that's more service than humiliation. There was a little bit of humiliation, but that was more during the argument, which I had to watch a few times to really get my head around. He didn't really humiliate her, you know, in the course of their relationship.
Well, just I'm talking about the act of spanking in itself, you know? You're treating someone as if they are a child and disciplining them in that manner.
It's correcting for the mistake.
Right?
It's a whole different psychology. She had made the mistake and he was correcting her.
Well, right. But she, you know, exhilarated from it.
Yeah.
You know, she made typos on purpose to repeat.
To get that attention.
Yeah.
It wasn't about the pain. It wasn't about, you know, it wasn't the same reason she was cutting. It was to give her the structure that she needed in her life.
But you could say that she was going after that sensation.
Hmm.
It's way healthier than what she was doing.
Of course.
Before. You know,
yeah.
She's never going to get killed from a spanking. Well, mm-hmm. I guess it's like the Hulk or something.
Yeah. But with a bare hand, it's not going to do any damage now.
So in this trilogy, we have Dom DeLuise last week.
And this week
we have Dom Hulk.
Uh-huh. Incidentally, just a little continuity issue. Was she seen smoking at all before her first masturbation scene?
Because
I don't think she was. I didn't notice it, at least.
I can't recall, tell you the truth.
And as an ex-smoker, I do tend to notice that sort of thing.
It was odd. It just came out of nowhere, and then we don't see her do it again.
Right. It's just in that one scene, which was a little weird.
Yeah.
Oh, the ending with the cockroach I loved, too.
Oh, yeah.
He goes off to work and, you know, she's made the bed and, you know, she's being a good little sub. And then she just drops this cockroach on the bed. This dead cockroach. Although the hold on her face at the end was a little weird. You know, the movie ends and she delivers her last line and it freezes and it just shows her. No, it doesn't freeze, but it's just this trail off on her face before the credits come up.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It was a little weird.
It was also very ambiguous. You know?
Okay.
I mean,
I didn't take it that way, but interesting.
Like, it did seem like she was entirely happy with it. It was a little confusing that they would end in that way.
Mm.
Either way, it is an odd choice to end your film that way.
Yeah, yeah. However, whatever the meaning of it is, yeah.
Your actress just giving a look off to a far off look,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, huh.
And the look itself didn't seem odd to me. The fact that they held on it for like a good 3 seconds was the weird part.
Right, but it brings attention to it.
Yeah.
And then you have to figure out what it was she was, you know,
mm-hmm.
thinking at that point.
Right. On a sequels and remakes?
On a sequels and remakes. I think we did.
Yeah, we already did the remake, yeah. There are no sequels, no official sequels. We've already reviewed the effective remake.
Remember last week I said, you know what, this would be so much better if he wasn't like a super powerful billionaire, but more of a regular guy.
And that's what we have here.
There we go.
On to Brains.
On to Brains.
I love this movie. There were some oddities here and there, some things that didn't quite fit, but I think I can, you know, I think they'll make sense with further viewings. There is that one minor little continuity issue with the cigarette, but I'm going 5.
Well, I loved it. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I think you can see this for Maggie Gyllenhaal, if for no other reason at all, but I don't think I'd recommend it. So I'm going to go 3.5.
All right. And what have we learned?
We learned that when you want to send your very best, send a worm.
Nice. I was trying to come up with something like that. And I learned that cake covering any song makes it better. Their cover of I Will Survive is in the movie. And
honestly, half a brain is from Cake. Yeah. Is from Cake, actually.
And every cover I've heard of them from them has been great.
Have you heard them do the theme to Coupling? Perhaps.
Yes, I have. Perhaps. I think that might have been the first cover I heard of theirs and love it. All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing Bitter Moon, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoy the show, give us a little word of mouth. Spread the word. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, in order up through Beastmaster, I think. And given that we've added 5 movies since our plan in the beginning of the year, I think we're good till like May.
Oh, yeah.
And if not later.
We're probably taking that week off at the end of February.
Well, yeah, we're definitely taking the week of my birthday off. And that's May if we don't take any other weeks off, which is unlikely until then.
Yeah.
Odds are by the time we get to Beastmaster, we won't have to worry about your heating kicking on in the middle of the show. Which is what that noise has been this last few weeks. Scott has a new mic.
Yeah, it can pick up a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. You also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And of course, the recommendations list. I was a little surprised. I mean, you came close, but it didn't quite hit it for you.
Yeah, I can't see myself just going, oh man, you gotta watch this movie, Secretary.
Funny thing is, I recommended it as soon as I was done watching it. I sent messages to Jen and Apolline to recommend it.
I think if the ending hadn't gotten on the silly side like that, I think I probably would have been.
Mm-hmm. So the whole Tent City thing really threw you.
Yeah, it was just like, what? It just didn't belong.
I kind of thought it was just like a nice quirky indie thing, but.
You know, it's this relationship between the two of them and stuff. Yeah, there are a few outlying players that get into the orbit, but then to just have this whole, like, everyone's gonna come to visit. It's like, what?
The only thing that really kind of bugged me, and I know we're outside of the review now, but was his masturbation scene. He kind of overplayed it a bit. He got a little stereotypical and almost comedic.
Wait a minute. I guess it would depend upon how long.
Fair point. Yeah. I don't know. He seemed to go a little too comedic there.
You're jerking off, not tasing yourself.
Exactly. James. Anyway, of course, you can email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 401-4368-ZT01 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
You can go fuck yourself.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you'll always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Keep both your feet on the floor until I come back.
Another, little bit in place of the outro, because now I don't have to search for an outro, for an outtake.
Although we had some good ones this week, I
probably
think.
We were just looking at our Facebook analytics, and I came up with a question. For those of you who listen who don't know us, how did you find out about the show? I'm actually really curious to find this out. You know, how did the word spread?
Yeah, because we, of course, don't pay for anything.
Right, no, we don't do, we kind of suck at self-promotion.
Yeah, we just, if it happens, hey, that's nice.
Uh-huh. And obviously, there are a handful of people who listen to the show who we know personally and who we've told about the show. But there are quite a few of you who I know I've never met or never had any contact with outside of, whatever your listener submitted has been.
Right.
So I'm really curious to know how you find out about the show.